From Toronto, Canada, this is 1 Megahertz, an Apple II podcast. In this episode, a facelift for A2 Central, a price drop for ProTerm, and hey, is that an Apple II magazine in your mailbox, or are you just glad to see me? Also, a 2E you can see through, a review of nothing, and I try again to tell you who will be first on the mic at Kansas Fest. All that, plus a chance to win an Apple II on The Price is Right, coming up on 1 Megahertz for December 2006. Welcome to 1 Megahertz, 8-bit Apple news and 2-bit Apple reviews. I'm Carrington Vanston. Thanks for listening. This will be a relatively short podcast this month because it's already well into the afternoon and I'm going out this evening to celebrate the new year. Yeah, it's the 31st, which means today is my last chance to get a podcast done in December, so I don't technically miss 2 months in a row. So I think I'll pass on the reviews this month, even though I do have 2 games, a word processor, and a utility program still to review, including that amazing game I hinted about in the last episode. But since time is limited, you'll have to wait one more show to hear about it. I'll give you a hint, though. It was published by Datasoft in 1987, and it involves the search for eyeballs. Can you guess what it is? I'd never heard of it before, which I'm still surprised about because it is darn good and it's still kicking my butt. It's darn hard. Instead of the reviews, I think I'll just do the news and then point you to a couple of cool Apple II related videos that I stumbled across on the internet lately. Anyway, like I said, it's December 31st, the last day of the year. For some, the last day is a day of merrymaking and generally cavorting about, sort of like a bacchanalia, except without as much political intrigue or plotting against the Senate. Or maybe there is, who knows? I've heard about the kind of parties you go to. For others, the last day is a time of reflection. Well, not literally, I mean, you don't become shiny. It's a time to look back on the year at our successes and our failures and make plans for the coming year, maybe decide upon a few well-meant but inevitably short-lived resolutions. And I guess for others, last day is just the day in which the crystal on your palm turns black and you have to choose between going to carousel or running. Take a tip from a guy who knows, follow the corridor with the pipes overhead, the way is always down. Now for the rest of us, we're in that happy limbo between the holidays in which presents are bought and the day on which the credit card bills actually arrive. So I think it's fitting that this end-of-the-year podcast has a theme of some sort. I'd considered reflection, the non-shiny sort, but maybe predictions for the coming year. I think instead I'm going to go with failure. For instance, my failure to get a November podcast out, even though it did get mostly recorded, well, sort of mostly, after the Canadian Thanksgiving in early October, which I spent in Vermont, actually, I came back and I worked 51 days straight. And long days, too. Some of them very long. So after that, I was pretty burnt out. I did record a podcast, or maybe about half a podcast, but it was more out of obligation to, you know, try to stick to the monthly podcasting schedule rather than out of my normal just enjoyment of doing this. I don't know if it comes across in my voice, but I love doing this podcast. I love getting feedback from you guys. I love sharing my new Apple II hobby with you. I really, really dig this. So I think that episode would have been, would have been no great shakes to listen to anyway. Not like this one with its theme of failure. But this theme does segue nicely into the first item of Apple II news. So let's get to that, shall we? Yes, I think we shall. If you've already listened to the October episode, and if not, well, don't blame me, I've given you lots of time, then you may have noticed that even though I promised to tell you who will be first to rock the mic at Kansas Fest 2007, I never actually got around to telling you who that would be. For some reason, Apple's GarageBand software and I had a disagreement about what to do with that part of the recording. I thought it should be left in when I exported the audio. It, on the other hand, seems to have disagreed, and clearly it won the argument. I'm not even sure how this happens, but I have the GarageBand file, and I don't record these podcasts straight through in one clip because I'm not nearly that good on a microphone. Instead, it's done in tiny little segments. And for some reason, one of those segments, the one about who's first on the mic at Kansas Fest, just isn't included whenever I export the file. Sort of strange. But now, for completion's sake, even though it's slightly old news, Sherman, set the Wayback Machine for October 30th, 2006, when I should have been heard to say the following. And finally, in Apple II news this month, the keynote speaker for Kansas Fest 2007 was announced. It's going to be David Zitella, who was originally editor-in-chief of Nibble magazine and then spent 7 years with Apple. He's now the founder, president, and CEO of Klix Marketing, an internet marketing agency. Now, I'm delighted with this choice because Nibble was a magazine that I just loved. And as regular listeners to 1 MHz will know, I'll be attending my own very first Kansas Fest next year. So I'll be there to hear Mr. Zitella speak. Now, Kansas Fest will be taking place from July 17th to the 22nd next year in Kansas City, Missouri. And I don't know if anybody else has noticed, but the Kansas Fest website has been redesigned. It looks great, so make a sentence out of the following words. Notes find links you'll the show in. So, feel free to open both this episode and the October show in the audio editing application of your choice, and with a little copy here and a little pasty there, you'll have yourself the director's cut edition of the October 1 MHz podcast. Very collectible. And if you bring it to Kansas Fest next year, I'll be happy to sign the waveform for you, which will make it double secret probation collectible, which is very collectible indeed. In other news, have you noticed that the a2central.com website has been revamped, as Shakespeare would have said if he, you know, surfed the net more? It's been divided into two Countem 2 sections, an A2 Central Community Resource Portal, there's a mouthful, basically that's the website, and also an A2 Central BBS that you can sign up to use for free. The new site is much like the old site, and pretty much follows that design, if I'm recalling it correctly, with a big center column of Apple II news and then links and stuff on either side. One very nice thing about all this is that the old A2 Central site's archives are still right there, all the way back to June of 2000. And there's a new calendar feature too, at least I think it's new, I never noticed it before. If you head over to a2central.com/calendar, you can view month-by-month Apple II events. There's not a lot there yet, but it does have monthly meeting dates for both the Kansas City A-Bug and the Princeton Apple II users group. Plus, of course, next July is Kansas Fest, which reminded me to mark those dates on my own calendar. Now, this event calendar is different from the calendar on the homepage, which just links to news for a given day. And I don't know how useful that feature is, I mean, since most months probably don't have more than 10 or 15 news items anyway. So the monthly archive links on the right-hand side seem to be the best way to browse earlier items. But you can find the event calendar by clicking on the events link in the site navigation menu. One thing the new design has done, I guess, is move or change the RSS feed because it's broken the A2 Central part of the RetroRoundup.com site, which is too bad because I really like Retro Roundup. It's a convenient way to get a single glance overview of a bunch of retro computing news. I'm sure things will get fixed in short order, though. I've joined the new A2 Central BBS. I've only used it via the web interface so far, which is, oh my goodness, very ugly, but it's functional, and I expect I'll like the aesthetics a lot more when I telnet in next time, which is, I think, the preferable way to interact with it. Oh, and I also joined in the chat at irc.a2central.com. For once, like most IRC servers, it's limited to 9-character nicknames, so us Carringtons can't use our real names. So I selected 1 MHz as my nick. The space between the 1 and the MHz wouldn't work for some future plans, but Sean nicely changed it to just 1 MHz, no space for me. For some reason, I wasn't able to use that either. So for my first chat, I wore the highly ineffective disguise CV as my nickname, and everyone saw through it. I subsequently discovered that the server just doesn't seem to like the use of a 1 as the first letter. So I changed the digit 1 to a capital I, and I am now known by the handle iMegahertz. That may actually end up being the title of my Apple II memoirs. Never can tell. Hopefully, some of you listening to this podcast will join in the Apple II community fun, either on the free BBS or on IRC. If so, look for me. I'm the guy who can't spell 1. Now, in other Apple II news, both this month and last, there was talk in one of the Apple II Usenet groups about the price of ProTerm, the long-standing and very highly reviewed Apple II communication software by Intrek. And yes, it is still published and currently for sale for the Apple II. Very cool. The talk on the street, well, on the street of Usenet anyway, was the price of ProTerm was now only around $20. The Intrek website still had it listed at a higher price. I can't recall exactly. I think it was $69.95. When the question came up about whether the Intrek website was outdated, I did what any good investigative podcaster would do. I picked up the phone and I called him. I spoke with Jerry down in Phoenix, Arizona, and he confirmed that the site had been having some difficulty and they'd been unable to update it for some time. But yes, the price of ProTerm for the Apple II is just $19.95 plus $5 shipping for either Canada or the US. He said he was working on a new website which should be up soon. Now, that was early November. In the meantime, Jerry's been far less lazy than me because while I've skipped a podcast, he's gone and started making a whole new website. It's still at intrek.com, but right now all the old links are dead and the site's just a pardon our dust, new stuff coming soon sort of thing. So the menu there is not yet functional and nor is the online site, but it does list both an email address and a telephone number you can use to contact Jerry if you'd like to order ProTerm. If you're looking for a link, just remember the lyrics. He's got a website. I got a brand new pair of roller skates. Wait, no. Show notes. I've got show notes. I knew I had something. Oh, and speaking of things still published for the Apple II, you know what else I got? I've got an envelope. Okay. Not just any envelope, but an envelope from Tennessee, home of the Great Smoky Mountains, the United States Chess Federation, an average of 15 tornadoes per year, 7 official state songs, and Syndicom, publishers of Juiced GS, the only remaining printed magazine for Apple II users and enthusiasts, of which, of course, I am one, and maybe you are too. I subscribed to Juiced GS recently, and as a 2006 subscriber, my first mailing will include the 3 back issues from this year, which I think is what's in this envelope. I thought I'd wait to open it up on mic, so let's rip this baby open and see what we got. Yep, it is indeed 3 issues of Juiced GS, Volume 11, Issues 1, 2, and 3, from March, June, and September of this year. Let's see, the cover stories are Jumping In Head First, an interview with Byteworks, famed Apple II programmer and scuba diver Mike Westerfield. Issue 2 features Safe 2. Oh, I remember talking about this in an earlier episode of this podcast. Oh, that's right, the standalone FTP client from the author of Spectrum. And issue 3 has Kansas Fest 2006 as its cover story. Not a big surprise there. I suspect that one of the 4 issues of Juiced GS every year features a Kansas Fest wrap-up, since that seems to be the central event of the Apple II community nowadays. Now, let's see, the magazine itself, which is really more of a cross between a magazine and a newsletter in its look, is it's really nice. This is heftier than I thought it would be. I mean, each issue is, let's see, they're all 20 pages, so that's about twice the size I thought it'd be. That's a pretty decent size. It's printed in black and white on pretty decent stock. They're printed tabloid size, which is 11 by 17, and then folded down to 8.5 by 11 inch pages, and then double stapled. From the photos, I'd say I'd say it's probably produced on a laser printer rather than a press, since they have that sort of low contrast look that laser printers and photocopiers get when the light parts of an image, you know, blow out and the dark parts crush to black within a pretty narrow gamut. But the text is very crisp, and there is plenty of it, which is the main reason any of us are going to want to subscribe. Wow, I got to say, at first blush here, I am just delighted with this. There looks to be lots of stuff here. I mean, each issue has a ton of content. And it's exciting, you know, just to get an Apple II publication in 2006. Oh, and speaking of which, a little birdie told me, by which I mean I have insider information, that the final issue of Juiced GS this year will contain an article by yours truly. I wrote a short piece about podcasting from the how-to technical angle, with some Apple II references thrown in, of course, for the December 2006 issue, which I guess is probably coming out pretty soon. So that will be exciting. Well, for me anyway. Okay, I am very happy with the arrival of my three back issues. I would say, even just from glancing through these, that I strongly recommend you subscribing, because I am just really looking forward to reading these. But I will put them aside for later, and we will get back to the show. Now, how's this for a phrase that grabs your attention? In preparation for cutting my Apple IIe motherboard in half, I decided it would help to have an X-ray of the board. Now, that's a sentence you don't come across every day. It was, in fact, the first sentence of a post by Grant Stockley to the CompSys Apple II newsgroup. You see the most interesting things on Usenet. Now, Grant, who, by the way, is also the creator of the new Altair 8800 kit, goes on to write, "The motherboard received a dose rate of 17.84 R per minute for the scans and calibration. About 27 minutes for three scans and a calibration. This would have been a dose of 482 rad. The Disk 2 card received the same dose rate, but it was in the vault for the whole time the motherboard was in there. It received radiation for a total of about 32 minutes, 571 rad. To put it in perspective, if a group of people were exposed to that dose, 50 to 90% would die after 30 days, 90% without intensive medical care. Primary cause of death is internal bleeding and infections. Females become sterile." And that's it. And then he just links to a pair of X-rays, one of the 2E motherboard and one of the Disk 2. Now that is an interesting Usenet post. Of course, I'll include links in the show notes so you can get a look at, or really a look through, these irradiated pieces of hardware. They're in high res, too. I mean, they're large images. I expect I'll see at least one of these printed out and stuck on a wall or a door at Kansas Fest. Maybe my wall or my door. In the meantime, if you're curious to see what it would look like to work on an 8-bit Apple II if you had X-ray vision, then stick on your Superman underoos and head over to monsterfeet.com, where you'll find links to Grant's X-rays, as well as to his new Altair 8800 kit, in case you're curious about those other vintage computers, which I am curious about, of course, because as I think I may have mentioned in an earlier show, probably the very first show, the very first computer I ever owned was an Altair 8800. I got a kit that somebody else had bought. I bought it from them. They had tried to put it together, really had done almost nothing. And then I finished it from there. And so I have very, very fond memories of the kit. And if I could shell out that amount of dough, then I would be picking up one of Grant's kits in a heartbeat. But right now, I think I'm going to stick with the Apple II focus. Mostly because Apple II collecting costs almost nothing. Isn't that wonderful? And let's see, what next? Oh, right. As I said at the top of the show, I'm skipping the reviews this month, but I do have a couple of interesting Apple II-related videos to point you towards. The first is a segment from an old British TV show called Making the Most of Your Micro, in which we learn about the miracle of a newfangled thing called electronic mail.
Today we're going to look at how computers can be made to talk to each other, and in particular, how they can become a powerful extension to your telephone.
Oh, the crazy ideas that some people had. Now, in the segment, a busy London businessman uses his Apple microcomputer and this new electronic mail thingy to keep in touch with a remote office in San Francisco.
Although he's over 5,000 miles away from his head office in San Francisco, Bank of America employee Jerry Van Atta has to keep in daily contact. Sending letters is too slow, and because of the 8-hour time difference, phoning from London during their working hours is inconvenient. And the person he wants could be out of the office. The answer for Jerry, as you might expect, is to use his microcomputer. Jerry makes a phone call to his London office and connects his own micro to the phone using an acoustic coupler. He is then linked to the head office computer in San Francisco, which he can use as a kind of mailbox where messages can be left, providing he knows the right password.
Now, I've now told the computer, hopefully properly, that I want an index of the messages that are there, and now it'll tell me that I've got 4 messages and who they're from. And I can selectively read any one of them. I can save them on my own disk and print them out here if I want to, store them here for later use, or leave them on the main computer, or erase them.
And not only can he use his micro to read the messages colleagues have left for him from wherever they might be around the world, he can also send his own.
I can send group messages to a bunch of different people, but if I want a message to go to a person, then only that person can read it. Message arrives at the main computer and it sits there in storage waiting for the person to read their mail. Having a computer at home means that I'm able to edit messages myself. I don't have to depend upon my secretary to retype things for me 3 times. It also means we can talk to people around the world without having to worry about what the time zone is and whether he's up now or whether he's even in the office. And I know the message is going to get there and not be garbled.
I remain unconvinced. I mean, I still have my secretary retype my podcast 3 times. What's wrong with that? If you want to see the busy London businessman do his electronic mail thing, then head over to the show notes where you'll find a link to the TV segment on YouTube. The second video I want to point you towards, which is also on YouTube, is from 1984. And this one comes with a word of caution. It may hurt your ears and your sensibilities. It's an Apple theme song, actually produced by Apple and sung by Irene Cara, or an Irene Clona, to the tune of her oh-so-80s song, What a Feeling. Now for me, for some reason, I've always associated Irene Cara with the movie DC Cab that she appears in for 1 scene, I think. It's one of those guilty pleasure movies. I can't explain why I like this film. I mean, I shouldn't. Come on, it stars Mr. T, the Barbarian Brothers, and the guy who played Wojo on Barney Miller. But there's something about the film that makes me laugh every single time. Anyway, the year after DC Cab, Apple still liked Irene Cara enough to use a version of What a Feeling as the Apple theme song. And here, if you've sufficiently braced yourself, is a bit of that.
Yeah.
Okay, that's enough. Put Irene back in the box. Now, if you want more, the whole song, including the Apple corporate video it accompanied, is available online. See the show notes, if you dare. And finally, one last audio snippet from a video segment, this time from the game show The Price is Right, in which the items up for grabs are a jet ski and a very familiar-looking home microcomputer.
Randall, it's a pleasure to get you up here, and look what you can win.
A home computer and a jet ski. First, the Apple personal computer for your business or classroom. Your personal computer is portable, easy to set up, operate, and program for your personal computing from Apple. Second, the jet ski from Kawasaki. The thrills of speed boating, water skiing, and surfing. Handlebars control turning. Hand throttle control speeds up to 35 miles per hour. The jet ski from Kawasaki.
Randall tells me he's visiting us from Texas, and we want the visit to be a happy one. We want you to win both of these prizes. And you will if you tell me which one is the bigger bargain. You see, these prices are below the actual retail prices of the prizes. Which one is more below the actual retail price? This one or that one over there?
$14.95.
The Kawasaki, he says, is the bigger bargain. Over here to the Apple, bargain price $7.95. Actual retail price? $11.95, a difference of $400 over to the Kawasaki. Bargain price $14.95, actual retail price $22.95, a difference of $800 in your life. You win them both. Have fun in Southern California.
Oh, well done, Randall. I wonder if he still has the computer. If you want to see Randall, the jet ski, and some really big hair, well, the show notes will hook you up with all the linky goodness. And I think that pretty much brings us to the end of this episode. Boy, half an hour long and I consider it short. I do tend to ramble. But to wrap up this month's theme, failure, I should tell you that while I was putting stuff away after the traditional Christmas visit with my family, I found in my closet five boxes. Was there five? I think it was five. Yeah, five. Five boxes, sealed, addressed, and ready to send. What's in them? The remaining Cartoon Head cookie jar software. I sent out the first few, and then I just sort of forgot for like 2 months, and thus this month's theme. So, sorry about that. Strangely, I didn't receive any email from any of the winners asking something along the lines of, "Hey, Mr. Podcaster, where the heck's my software? You people are far too polite. I'm gonna end up taking advantage of you." So if you're in the group of winners who has yet to receive anything, my apologies. This bunch is all ready to go, and I'll send it out, well, I guess everything's closed tomorrow, but it'll go out shortly, and you'll receive it shortly afterward. And I can hear you now saying, "Oh yeah, I heard that before, but this time, really, I mean it." And that's the show. Next month, I plan to go back to the regular format and include some reviews, including that game about the eyeballs, another mystery game, and and the mystery game is one I have yet to unshrink wrap, and a word processor, which I can tell you is not getting a thumbs up. So, if you have a suggestion about vintage word processing software that I might actually like now that I've gotten used to its modern counterparts, then drop me a line. Maybe I can have both a positive and a negative review. In the meantime, thanks again, as always, for listening to my podcast and for sticking with me when I skipped a month. Have a fun and safe New Year's celebration, and I'll see you in 2007. You've been listening to 1 MHz, the Apple II podcast. Feedback and suggestions can be sent by email to feedback@monsterfeet.com. All the files and links mentioned in this episode can be found in the show notes in the 1 MHz section of the monsterfeet.com website. And like all Monsterfeet podcasts, all the original material in this episode is released to the public domain.